We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, no Mike today. And we're recording this with all but one game completed. We got the Phoenix Pelicans game in a close one at halftime, but we had a very entertaining weekend of basketball. The games 3 and 4, to me, always have their own personality to a series. Now, you're going into those either in a tied series or someone's up 2-0. And then that game 3 has its own personality, depending on that, right? The team that's down 2-0, that's do or die time, right? No team's ever come back. Isn't that a crazy stat? You'd think that at some point in NBA history, someone would have come back from 3-0, but it's never happened. And that team is usually playing that game at home. And they know that if they don't win that game, they're in deep trouble. There was a game, Atlanta and Miami was that game 3. Miami went up double digits and Atlanta just played desperately and hit some great shots. The same fortune didn't hit them in game 4, where Miami really took a stranglehold of the series. And that's kind of where I see us ending this weekend, is the teams who were clearly better than their opponent. I think that we came out of this weekend with a clear idea of who that is. And then the teams that are quite close to each other, I think we know that by now too. You've seen many game 3s and game 4s, and that's where a lot of this first round of the playoffs are right now. What are your thoughts on those types of games? And what are the game 3s and 4s that stood out to you this weekend?
These are my favorite games of any playoff series.
Interesting.
I find them to be the most entertaining. When you get to games, the middle games, game 7s are often like clunky, and teams are sort of both feeling the pressure. And there's definitely a time where that just shines through and it takes over as the main story of the game rather than the quality of the teams. And I feel like game 6s are often that real separator game where the team that's better often shows it the most in game 6 if they have the chance to win. Right. So there's that desperation feeling, but a lot of times game 6s can be great if you're the team and if you're a fan of the team that ends up doing the winning, because those are the games where you feel like, ah, yes, like we pulled that out in a very crucial way. But games 3 and game 4, where if you are down 2-0, that desperation feeling and the ability of the team who is then up to match that. And because if they really are of better quality, they will hang in at certain points where you feel like, oh, okay, these dudes are trading in the middle of the ring. It's that sort of game. And a lot of times the team that has the desperation can then channel that for one last push at the end, or make just enough plays where it's like, ah, oh, okay, we hung on there. And then in game 4s, that's the, okay, it's actually time to either exert our control or, hey, we're suddenly all of the way back in it now, right? And it's those turning point games where then if you do go back 2-2, that game five is just like the potential to be just an awesome game, right? But games three and games four to me are where a series can turn and really take shape. And you get a feeling of where you really know what both teams are about. And so in that respect, the series that stood out most to me around that were actually the Philly-Toronto series in its own way, because I thought Toronto, if they could have won that game three, they could have done some convincing of themselves that like they had it, right? And like that they could have then gotten it back to 2-2. And then at 2-2, sort of anything can happen, right?
That's
right. It's just like, okay, well, one bad maxi game and Harden sort of playing at the level that he's been played at. And even if you get a great Embiid game, it's just like, okay, well, we haven't gotten the good Van Vliet game yet. We haven't, right? Like there are things that Toronto can feel like, hey, if we just get a couple things going, like we can suddenly be up 3-2. And now all of the pressure is on those guys again. But Embiid hitting that game winner in the manner that he did sort of like ended that series. So even though Toronto won game four, this feels much more like a gentleman's sweep now to me than anything else. And then the other game to me was Boston and Brooklyn, right? Where it's like Boston showed how much better they are than Brooklyn. And I, before the playoffs started, I had still sort of reserved something for Brooklyn as them having a path to do something. And Boston shut off their water in a way that I don't want to say it surprised me, but because Boston's been so good, but it did sort of crystallize things for me. And you had said some things in the group chat about Brooklyn and their faults sort of really aligning with like what the Lakers' faults have been this season. And I thought that those were interesting points. So go in any direction that you want, but within the context of that, I do want you to hit on that point a little bit because I do think it was interesting.
Yeah, let's talk about Brooklyn for a bit because I suspect that they won't be in the forefront of the NBA conversation for
might
for
be our last
very
chance.
Long.
Might
right?
be our last
like,
chance.
We will be able to talk about Boston again. I am sure of it. I will make sure of that. Lord knows, right? So Brooklyn, yeah, they remind me so much of us, that East Coast version of us. They're another three-star build. They were at the beginning of the season. They traded one of those stars, but for another player who's a star, right? At least in theory, but did not play in any games this year. And that's something that to me is the story of the Brooklyn season. The way they got there is a little bit differently than us, but they never really built anything they never really built anything either. They used more starting lineups than we did. They actually led the league in that stat. Isn't that incredible? Our 41
Amazing.
Different
Amazing.
Starting lineups was not the most. Brooklyn, I think, had 43. And within that, we were talking about this last week about the separate entity of the team that gets built through the repetition and the games, through the 82 games. One point that Mike always likes to make is like, look, you can do the load management stuff and you can take it easy and gear up for the playoffs and all that. But if you look at the teams that actually win, that actually go deep into the playoffs, that win titles, that contend for titles, they usually had a pretty good regular season, right? Like they built something over the course of that. And some of the exceptions can be a defending champ that may be a little bit tired. So Milwaukee is a team for which I go, like, do they have more in reserve? And then we've had a lot of attrition this weekend, Chris Middleton being one of the players that's out. But you have to have built something, like you have to play together. It's such a simple concept, but you have to play together as a basketball team to be good as a basketball team. And it's one of those things where you make your own luck, and the Lakers fit this description too, where like, yes, you got hit by some injuries and things like that, but they very much have a, we're going to roll the ball out there. And by the force of will of these two incredible shot makers and scorers, that it doesn't really matter what you're going to do. But I liken it, D, to a football team that, and this series between Boston and Brooklyn is like, Boston's a team that's great in the trenches, that has a great offensive line, a great defensive line, and their defensive line, right, it is going up against a team that has a star quarterback and a star running back or a star receiver, right? But their offensive line and their defensive line, not so hot. And so that star quarterback, maybe he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game, but he's running for his life every possession because the defensive line of the other team is putting so much pressure on him. And that, you know, those games generally go in favor of the team that has such an advantage in the trenches. And so that's another commonality they had with the Lakers. This was something, D, that in our text thread, you commented about Brooklyn not playing with any force. So let's take a break. And when we come back, I'd love to hear your thoughts on their style of play, because I think it's informative on the Lakers season that we just had, but also how we should be building the team going forward.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I look at the Brooklyn team and the similarities with the Lakers in terms of the small guards and how much they depend on small guards is really right there, especially guards who don't necessarily play a lot of defense. So you mentioned earlier that we're at halftime. We started recording right at halftime of the Suns-Pelicans series, and Jose Alvarado is a small guard, but that dude doesn't play small.
No.
Right? He is up in dudes. Like, he is battling for every inch of the hardwood, every possession.
Well, I think that's one of the lessons. Like, if you're going to be small, you have to be a competitive maniac, like a Chris Paul, a Jose Alvarado, right? And we're still in the first round. If the Pelicans were to advance, I think we'd see a round, be it the second round or however far they got, where maybe Jose Alvarado, like, there's only so much competitiveness can get you, right? Like, at some point, you're still 6 feet tall. And so, but just to survive in this landscape, I think you need to be that kind of guy.
Yeah, and so, needless to say, the Nets don't have a lot of those guys. The closest version of that is maybe Bruce Brown. And they're relying on Bruce Brown a lot. He is starting now.
And he was very good?
He's been good. And he's been one of their best players in terms of like two-way play, right? But I look at the Nets, and this is where, in the same way that the Lakers... So, it's funny. Because in the same way that the Lakers said, we're going to be a power team, right? We're gonna have a lot of ball handling. And so the idea was like, oh, well, we've got enough shooting, but really they didn't within the context of the players who needed to be able to shoot well. Like, you know, they really, we talked about AD and him not being able to shoot very well, like that was a critical part of really the build that this Lakers team was supposed to be. So the fact that AD didn't play at all, that sucked in general. But even if he would have played a lot, he would have needed to at some point found his jumper, or else there would have been other problems to deal with, right? But the idea around the Lakers was like, okay, yeah, well, if the Lakers throw out a lineup that has Russell Westbrook and Talen Horton Tucker and LeBron James and Anthony Davis, the idea was, okay, sure, that team can't shoot, but go feel free in trying to stop them from getting into the paint, right? They're still going to get there because all of their strengths are that they get there regardless. Almost all of those dudes, regardless of what the defense has looked like, have been able to get into the paint. And so Brooklyn has a very similar build in terms of like, okay, well, we've got these players. We've got a three-star build, right? But without one of the stars a bunch of times. We've got these small guards. But instead of them having power players, rim-seeking players, they have skill players. And so Boston is coming at them with a battle of like, okay, let's get in the phone booth. Every possession, we're going to be in the phone booth. And let's see if you can fight your way out of this close range physical attack. And Boston's like, and the Nets are like, but we're skill guys, right? So let's dance a little bit. Let me shake you. Let me try to create space and shoot over the top of you. And it's not working, Pete. It's just not working. Like, and they're not bringing enough force and physicality. The Nets aren't. And I don't think it's in their nature.
Darius, the post entries to Durant in the high post. We were talking about this. So you talk about having a skill advantage. For one, they've sat on KD's left-hand dribble and they've hounded his ball handling. So that's part of like being a skill player does not just mean the ability to make jump shots in a variety of different styles of jump shots. You need to be able to handle the ball. You need to be able to pass, but you also need to be able to, it's not skill, but it's technique. So if you're battling for post position, talk to me about what's happening in that dance. We talked last week about the dance between DeRozan and Giannis, the dance between KD and Tatum in establishing post position. KD is not sealing his man.
He's not.
He's not getting his. And when you're at a weight disadvantage, because Tatum's stronger than KD is, and if you're at a weight disadvantage, that's all the more reason that you have to use the proper technique. Like if you don't have a physical superiority, that you absolutely have to get down in a stance, get that chicken wing up, right? And KD hasn't done any of that. And not to mention the post-entry passes. And so like, KD and Kyrie may be skill players, but you need a certain degree of physicality to be able to impose because all of Brooklyn's gravity is on the perimeter. And so a team like Boston is just going to push up on them on the perimeter. And how often have you seen KD go into the basket in this series? That's how you beat pressure. If someone's pressing up on you, you don't back up. You don't just settle for the jumper. You attack them. And so the Nets' inability to do that and the inability to just do basic basketball stuff like the post seal has been really striking in this series.
Yeah, I just think that your point about technique is so good because Tatum going hand to hand, even if you argue that KD is close to or as strong as Tatum, Tatum has leverage advantages just by being shorter, right? So sure. KD is so great because he's so long, he's so tall, he can shoot over the top of you. But it's like a boxing match, right? Like they always tell the smaller guy, well, get inside, right? Like don't fight at a distance. That dude's just going to kill you with his jab. He's going to keep you at bay. And then he's going to throw the overhand at length. And he's just going to pummel you that way. No, you have to get inside when you're the smaller dude. And so Tatum is wrecking shop against Durant by just basically saying, look, beat me then. Beat me off of the dribble.
And his technique is fantastic, right? Yes. Like he's of all of his skills, his motor is really high up there, especially for a star player, right? Like a primary lead guy. He is. But not every young guy, like he likes the parts of the game that like, I'm going to play ball denial on this baseline inbounds play, right? It, like, there's a simple play in the game that he just knocked it out of bounds. Brooklyn got the ball back, but if he doesn't do his job right there, it's a layup because he was helping out on someone else who had got lost. But those are the things that win, that give you a 2 points here or prevent the other team from a 2 points there, that Tatum, for KD not doing the technique stuff correctly, Tatum is almost always in the correct stance and doing the correct thing. And that in and of itself has its own kind of force, that like, the guy you're going against is going to do the right thing every single time. Like, that has its own way of wearing on a team, I think.
Yeah, and especially when you know that you're outgunned. I'd love to see Simmons in this series just to see if his particular skill set could make an impact. And so I think that it's fair to question that it would, and I think it's fair to doubt that it would. But I look at the Nets and I see a team without a connecting player.
Yeah.
I see a team that has not enough size on the wing and not enough downhill physicality and not enough guys who actually want to pass in the middle parts of a possession, right? And so when you talk about those exact skill sets, that player is getting fits off in the tunnel every game, and then he's sitting on the bench, right?
What a strange season.
And so I get that it's easy to doubt Ben Simmons as an impactful playoff performer. Like, we've seen him struggle in these environments, but I'd be very interested to see what he looks like on this specific team, because the asks of him would be so different. And we've never seen those asks put on him. And so that's not me saying that he'd perform them. It's me wondering what it would look like with those asks. That's all I'm saying.
I think that's kind of the story of the Nets season. Very similar to us, right? Like that. Yeah. What would it have looked like if, but you got to play together. You got to be able to go through the 82, or if it's a midseason trade, that post-trade deadline, like, you get a good 20-25 game run in. Because if not, if you think you're going to roll the ball out there and go against a team that has been doing that, that has fought through their, okay, this doesn't work, but what if we did this? Aha, okay, that works. We're going to hold on to that. Those are, like, that team is just so much further along, D, that it makes a huge difference.
I totally agree. And so let's go to break here, because on the other side of this, the injury bug has started to pick up again, and it's having the potential to really impact these series. And so I want to use that as a lens to sort of project out for how some of these series are going to conclude, and then start to look at the second round. So, Pete, Chris Middleton, sprained knee. Devin Booker, strained hamstring. Kyle Lowry, strained hamstring.
Embiid with a thumb. He's going to play through it.
Embiid with a thumb, right? And he didn't play as well in game four.
Nope.
Now they're up 3-0, and there's reasons that go into, like, what kind of effort the team has, and that idea of, like, oh, we're not going to get swept on our home court sort of performance that Toronto had. But injuries now are starting to give us a little bit of, like, okay, what are things really going to look like? And so talk to me about a couple of the teams that aren't dealing with injuries, Golden State, and then what you think of the teams that are dealing with injuries and how they look to be handling those.
Yeah, no, that's something that I don't know if it just feels like it's been more. I know last season was a real outlier in terms of, you know, all-star caliber players being out, but that, you know, several players, 4 or 5 guys over the last week, big parts of their teams have gone out. So it certainly seems like it's happening more than ever before. And that's going to be part of it. If that's going to be part of it, that's going to be part of it. And so the team that I thought handled it the best is, I think, the team that's equipped to handle it the best, which I thought was Miami. I thought they had an excellent weekend in Atlanta. They had, Atlanta had that desperation comeback in a game 3, and then game four, Gabe Vincent started in his place. And Vincent's one of those guys that is going to be this unheralded role player that, you know, doesn't get a lot of attention, but a guy who can defend and knock down spot up threes and just kind of hold it down with a level of physicality. Those are the guards, D, that I see really thriving. And when everybody's moved on to the second round, I want to do a thing of like, okay, which teams had small guards in the first round and which teams did not? Like which the teams that moved on, how many small guards did they have? The teams that got eliminated, how many did they have? I think we're going to see a pretty big difference between the first and second round. And then Milwaukee. I thought Milwaukee really turned the screws on Chicago this weekend. They're a team, D. Middleton, we talked a little bit about him, that he hasn't looked good. And this is something where, like, I don't know enough about it to maybe...
Well, he's played so much.
That's like what I'm saying, though.
He went to the Olympics, and his run, I don't want to call it an outlier, but he was, out of all of the players in the playoffs that you felt like were ascending and sort of showing their worth, I thought Middleton, who's always been a wonderful player, played furthest above the level that he had shown to really be like, oh my God, Chris Middleton, the shot making that he's executing in their run to the championship was just otherworldly, really. And so that combination of a little bit of coming back to earth and the fact that he didn't get an off season, he just didn't. Like, he went to the Olympics.
No, absolutely. And that's why I've had this skepticism. And that is a really dangerous place for a team and a coach to be in, because if I don't know if this is the case, but if you have a player whose legs are kind of done, because you very well may be describing a player who's just played a little too much basketball in a certain period of time that doesn't have his legs, but he's Chris Middleton. He just helped you win an NBA title. What, are you going to bench him? Like, what? And so you have to play at, like, that's one of your guys. And so I've been really impressed by how Grayson Allen has stepped into that role. They have started Bobby Portis, and that's something that, if you look forward to the second round, that's going to be a great series. Boston, Milwaukee. And Boston has very much been a team that's plowing through teams. You're not going to be able to plow through Milwaukee. They may beat them, right? And I think that Middleton being out will matter, but they're going to have to do it in a different way, probably with more speed and athleticism than physicality. You're not going to bully a Milwaukee team with a front line of Bobby Portis, Giannis, and Brook Lopez. And so those teams are, I think, the teams that have handled it better than, say, a Phoenix team. And again, the game is on right now. But Phoenix is having a little bit of difficulties with New Orleans, in part because New Orleans is a big physical team, man. And so, like, I hate to keep hitting this note over and over and over again, but the point to me of us really zeroing in on these playoffs is to bring it back to the Lakers. And I'm seeing all these teams that remind me of, like, I remember when we were like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And so there's a certain, I think we need to return to that I am feeling that is like, there's good that we can take from what we've tried, but watching these playoffs, just that strength and physicality and force, I'm seeing it over and over and over again, even in that ability to handle the injuries that pop up.
Yeah, and I think too that it's combined with players who are mostly in their prime, right? And so when you talk about Phoenix not doing as well, like, I mean, yeah, they lost their best player, right? And so Chris Paul is their second best or 1A in all ways, right? And so Chris Paul is vital to everything that the Suns do, and you couldn't replace Chris Paul either, right? Now, you could work around it in certain ways if you had Booker, because Booker is so good, right? And so the Suns are still an excellent basketball team, but they are not the team that was 10 games better than everyone else in the entire damn league, because they just lost their best player.
That's right.
All three of you, me, and Mike had Booker as a first team all NBA player. Well, guess what? You lose one of those dudes, you're in trouble when the playoffs come. The fact that they are hanging tight, even against an eighth seed who was really a 10th seed, right? They're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you expect them to be able to hang tight, but New Orleans is an interesting group. But I want to go back to the Eastern teams that you mentioned, because Miami, like, so Oladipo, he hasn't really played these playoffs and hasn't played much at all this series. And he didn't pop to me in any way at all. I think he was 3-for-10 or something like that when you look at the box score. But you also look at his plus minus, and he was like plus a billion this game, like almost plus 40, I think. Like, I don't know what the number actually was, but it was pretty damn high. And the idea that Miami can just continue to grind you down, and you talk about physicality and toughness. Well, there's Jimmy Butler and PJ Tucker and Bam Adebayo, and these dudes just come at you and come at you and come at you, and they have a relentlessness in their approach, both offensively and defensively. And I also think, so I know you're high on Miami, but I also don't want to oversell it yet. I want to see them play.
No, I'm not trying to either.
I want to see them against a better team than Atlanta, just like I want to see Milwaukee against a better team than Chicago. Like, I feel like the advantages that Miami brings to really any series, like their own strengths, the things that they rely on, they work particularly well against Atlanta, I think. Just like
interesting.
Just like I think Milwaukee, their strengths are going to work against the Bulls as well, where the Bulls are sort of like, yeah, well, we don't have very many like front court players that are very good protecting the paint.
And we
especially.
Have Giannis.
And so, yeah, and we have Giannis. So, right? And then even Drew Holiday, who I think
physically,
like Caruso will be a guy, and they do have some perimeter options to throw at their guards, but it's just like, okay, well, still playing 10 feet and down against the Bucks, like, no, man, that's not what Chicago's going to do very well. And so I'm very interested to see how they navigate the second round, especially. But I have been super impressed with those teams, particularly because they have dealt with critical injuries to guys that if they don't make it back by like the end of the second round, you have to question what their championship probabilities actually are.
The more physically dominant team kind of starting to overwhelm the team that is weaker has been a theme throughout this first round. And but really, D, like, I don't know, I'm not sure we need 16 playoff teams. I'm turning into a grumpy old man on shit where it's like, so Denver, for example, Denver is Jokic and duct tape, and they fought their asses off. I say all that to compliment them, because that whole idea of like, oh, we just don't have the guys, or we could just fold and start our vacation early. I just wanted to give a shout out to them at the end of the pod. Like, they had every reason to be like, all right, time to wrap it up. And they came out and they played with a lot of heart that I just think, I don't know. I just wanted to acknowledge them. They're not going to win the series. It's probably a gentleman's sweep, but I thought Denver played with a lot of heart against Golden State today.
Me as well. And Jokic is just one of those guys that he just continues to impress me. Like, he could play on my team any day. Right?
Because, talk about a guy who could put a team on his back, man.
No, he's just so good. And the quality that he brings, like, does he have his deficiencies? Yes. Right? They started to switch everything towards the end of that game, and Steph put him on skates multiple times. But he's out there working his ass off. And then he also had the critical pass for the dagger three to Will Barton that basically sealed that game for them. Right? And so Jokic is just one of those really elite players that the playoffs are built for a guy just like that to do exactly what he's doing. You wish for Denver's perspective that they had more of their players available in order to make this more of a fight. Right? And we didn't even talk about a lot of the Western teams. Like, Luka came back from a calf injury, and Dallas promptly lost a game, and that series is now 2-2, and I'm interested to see the direction of that series and where that goes. And I'm certainly wondering if New Orleans is going to be able to hold on to this small lead and make it 2-2 in this series, because the West, these teams are beating each other up, and Golden State looks like they're just going to win another game probably in their next one, and then advance to the second round, and they look dangerous now. And so I'm sure you and Mike will hit that up on the next version of the Laker Film Room podcast.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not quite as high on Golden State as everyone else is, but we shall see. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. It'll be me and Mike. But until then, been listening to Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant.
For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.